Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, everyone. Happy New Year and welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I am your host, Rebecca Milzoff, deputy features editor at Billboard, Broadway fan all around here. And if you're listening for the first time, welcome. It's a new year. There's a lot of new Billboard on Broadway to come. But if you've never listened before, this is a great time when you're just staring out the window at bad winter weather if you live near New York, or if you're just getting back to school or back to your job. A great thing to do is to listen to past Billboard on Broadway episodes. In the past year, I got to have so many of my favorite creators and actors stop by the podcast, from composers like Jason Robert Brown and Joe Iconis to perennial Broadway favorites like Sutton Foster, to the casts of exciting new shows like Be More Chill, which, by the way, is coming to Broadway in February. Hooray! So I wanted to start the podcast in 2019 on a festive note. Who doesn't like festivity? And what says festivity better than Cher? She is a multi-talented musical icon, the kind of Billboard legend we love to talk about here, with 6 top 10 albums on the Billboard 200, 12 top 10 hits, and 4 number ones on the Hot 100. But she's also the kind of artist that we theater people especially love. I mean, if you just look at her outfits, you know this woman knows the full meaning of theater. But from her inimitable sense of humor to her filter-free, outspoken attitude to her killer voice, she is totally a show person through and through. And her life and music is the subject of a new show, which is called, well, The Cher Show. Now, whether you're a new or a lifetime musical theater fan, you know that so-called jukebox musicals can be controversial. They can go really right or really wrong, depending on the subject and the story. But I have basically been telling anyone who will listen that The Cher Show is one of the most all-out fun, totally delightful shows I have seen in quite some time. It brightened a really gross, snowy New York night for me when I saw it at the end of last year. And that was thanks in large part to both Cher's amazing life story, a great subject for a show, her great songbook. There are so many hits by Cher that you probably don't even realize exist, and the 3 talented actresses who play her at different points in her life. All 3 of them, Stephanie J. Block, Michaela Diamond, and Teal Wicks, came to the podcast recently, along with their sonny Jared Spector, to talk all things, and I really mean all things, Cher.
If I could turn back time, if I could find a way, I'd take back those words that hurt you and you'd stay.
Well, first I need to know who all the people at this table with me are, because we have like multiple incarnations of people. It's very exciting. Who are
I'm
you
Stephanie
and who do you
J.
play in the
Block,
show?
And I play Star.
I'm Michaela Diamond and I play Babe.
I'm Teal Wicks, and I play Lady.
I'm Jared Spector, and I play Sunny.
Easy peasy. But before we even start to talk about The Cher Show, I have to say I love the show before it even opened because of the marquee transition moment.
Oh,
did you,
sure.
Did you,
so good.
Yes. Did you see when it was
America,
when it was Angels
pitches.
In America, let's do this mission? That was the best thing I've ever seen. that wins some sort of prize. It set the tone very early on.
Yes, social media loved that little moment.
Well, I saw The Cher Show on kind of like the saddest night as far as New York winter weather goes, period. I was like slipping and falling all over ice. It was that like ice rainstorm about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was like, I had like dinner beforehand one block from the theater and was like, can I make it one block to the theater? But it was, it's so much fun. And I, you know, I feel like these shows about living artists are hard to get right, but it has like, it has a lot of fun as a show, and it has, I think, just the right tone. And I I haven't seen a show like this where every time each person opens their mouth, the audience like audibly gasps and is like, oh my God, they sound so much like her or him. As the case, you get like the most audible gasp, Jared, I think.
I think that's just the way that this that particular song is set up so well. You know, that's like a Rick Ellis trick. He did the same thing in Jersey Boys. By the time Jersey Boys gets to Sherry, like everyone can't wait for it because it's like 40 minutes in. And in this show, it's the same thing. By the time you get to I Got You, Babe, it's been 30 minutes and everyone is excited to hear it.
Yeah, it's like this sort of mood in the room changes. It's a lot of fun. So when you all heard about this show as an opportunity, like, what were your first thoughts? Did you immediately think, ah, yes, like singing a Cher is something that I'm qualified to do and that like feels right to me? Or how did it kind of come to you, and how did you decide like this is a project that feels like something I should do?
I was in the midst of doing falsettos, so it came to me about December of 2016. And at that juncture, I was excited for the project, but it didn't feel right for my life, the timing, what I was juggling at that point. Then a little more chatter happened. There was a reading, apparently, that went over like gangbusters in January of 2017, mm-hmm. I think. Yep. Was approached again, and the idea of it scared the bejesus out of me. I just, for some reason, my spirit wasn't ready to jump into what I thought she needed and what the project needed. And then I had a dinner with Jason Moore, who kind of set me straight and put my fears to the side. And I think all of that was post-traumatic stress disorder from playing Liza Minnelli as my Broadway debut when I was a younger gal in my 20s. And so that, I felt like I had checked off that box and I met that challenge, and it was a really tough, you know, row to hoe at that point. So when Jason then started to talk about the concept and there being three shares and it being kind of spiritual and we can talk to each other, and there was a whole layering that was happening to this show that I was not aware of when I kept saying, no, thank you, I wish you all the luck, no, thank you. And then something clicked for me, a couple of little like divine things in my life. For example, my daughter, her first song that she learned was A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes, and it was the first song that Cher sang. So there were little things that the universe kept dropping in my lap that I kept saying, okay, I hear you, I'm going to try, and I could fall right on my face, but let's just get in a room where I feel safe and try it. And things, magic started to happen with the creation and finding her, and so here we now sit.
I did not know a lot about Cher, so when this kind of came to me, I was joyously going into the room, but I was about to leave for college in a week and a half, so I know, I was going to Carnegie Mellon, and I was more than excited about that, and so this opportunity came, went into the room, and then once I got the call back, I was like, okay, well, now I want it. And so did a lot of research on her, and the only thing I really knew about Cher before going in was Burlesque, which was the only movie I have on DVD. I must have watched that movie with my mom, like, 28 times.
I was going to say, like, by the way, totally so great thing to know Cher from.
I mean, it's such a good movie. The more you watch it, the better it gets, too. Like, I'm giddy talking about it. And so I loved her in that, and I just kept falling more in love with her through the audition process. And once I got the offer for the lab and got in the room with these people who I had, like, looked up to for years, being, like, a nerd for musical theater, I was like, well, this is right. This feels absolutely right. And now we are here.
I was the last person on board. There had been a lot of developmental processes and moments. And I, earlier this year, and I'd heard about the show, and I was like, oh, cool. Of course there's going to be a Cher musical. Great. Go get them, people. Not even, like, nowhere in my brain was I like, oh, I should do that. I mean, I kind of was like, I mean, I guess I could do that, but I mean, I would be able to try to do that, but eh, whatever. It hasn't come my way, so let it be. And then earlier this year, near the beginning of the year, my agents were like, hey, so they're still looking for the character of Lady, and would you go in? And I was like, oh, I mean, yeah, of course, because I don't have anything else lined up, and duh, you don't say no. So going in really knowing nothing about the show. I didn't even know who was really in the show yet, who had been cast. I had no idea what was going on. And as soon as I got the material for the audition, it was so weird. As soon as I started singing some of the songs, I just was a moment that it clicked, and I was like, holy crap, oh, I sound really good on this. Oh, and I really like singing these songs. And these scenes are really grounded and interesting, and I get this woman. And it was just, it all kind of just clicked in a way that doesn't always happen in our business with roles and shows and characters. And luckily it just kind of worked. And the auditions were great. Everybody in the room was wonderful. And, you know, they would have the tape and would send it to Cher. And my final callback, Jason, our director, I was talking to him and he was like, we want you. Cher's still a little iffy just because she takes her a long time to really get on board with new things.
I think anyone who says, I'm going to play you in your life story may take us a little time to get on board as to who might play you.
She's entitled to think about
it. Yeah, I think so.
So I was like, okay, this feels so right. I love this character and I'm not going to blow it. So for the first time ever, I bought a wig for an audition. I got a long black straight wig because this fair-skinned redhead doesn't necessarily scream Cher. So I was like, I'm not going to lose it just because I look a certain way. And so I was so embarrassed walking. I wore the wig the day before around town just so I could get used to being out in the world with looking like that. And I was so nervous about running into people I know at the casting office beforehand. But it was great. It was really fun. And it all just kind of, it was worth it. So that was sort of my first step in being like Cher, taking bold risks. But she does. She doesn't shy away from the bold choice. So, I'm glad it worked out.
You wore the wig. It worked out.
Yeah.
So 3 years ago, I did a concert with my wife, Kelly Barrett, at 54 Below. And in it was all about musical marriages and musical married couples. And of course, we had to cover Sonny and Cher. And so I really didn't know a whole hell of a lot about them beforehand, other than, you know, stuff everybody knows, like I Got You, Babe, and Do You Believe in Life After Love? And, you know, the hits that, like, are just part of Americana, and you just have to be deaf to not know them. But then my wife made me watch basically every single episode of the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour, and that was 3 years ago. So by the time a year later I got that same offer that Steph was talking about for the reading that happened in January 2017, I was like, oh, yeah, I got this. I mean, I wasn't overly confident, but I felt like, wow, I've already done so much of the work for this that I would have then had to cram into 2 months. So then I went in and I felt pretty good, and then thankfully they sort of passed me through, and Cher approved of the project, and then we kept working on it, and it's been a real joy ever since. And I have to say that, you know, listening to each of the three women talk about their particular stories and maybe their particular insecurities, is just it's nice to be able to sit here and objectively say how fucking unbelievable each of them are. And to be able to watch each of them just blossom and be amazing night after night is a true privilege.
Come on. Thanks, brother.
It's true. I know you guys don't, like, if you do interviews, just the three of you, you don't get to say that, but I get to say it. It's just such a pleasure.
Thanks. No, I mean, I think the three of you really come across as individuals on stage, and I don't feel like I'm watching, like, three women who kind of look like Cher, and therefore they're singing as Cher, or they sound exactly like her, although at certain points it's kind of frightening. But, I mean, I think for people who haven't seen the show, it would be great to hear a little bit about, you know, the individual moments in Cher's life that you're embodying and sort of what the distinguishing things about your particular characters are.
As Star, I am the eldest incarnation. It's interesting to say, not sure what perhaps chapter I'm playing, because I feel like since I'm playing like from 40, 50, 60, I have to know Babe's journey, and I have to have Lady's journey, or else my character is empty. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had to do a beautiful and massive amount of homework to make sure that my star share was full-bodied, understood their paths, our paths together, to look back on my life and nurture and lift and guide. And so if the audience, like they said, hadn't seen it, it's interesting because we don't necessarily do it linear and just Babe takes the first third and Lady takes the second third and then I end the show. That's not the formula to our show at all. We interact with each other. We speak to each other. It's almost, we've referred to this before as Sherapy. It's like therapy, but for Cher. We're constantly in each other's heads. And that was a portion that I absolutely loved. If we had to break it down, I start taking over essentially at the end of the Cher show and also when she decides to move to New York and become an actress and then henceforth, you know, starts doing movies and the music career really starts to blossom. And so I guess 30s, 40s and on. Yeah.
And also you got the most insane wig, I think.
Which one are you referring to?
Not like how many?
I have eight wigs, sorry. But 12 wig changes, yeah, throughout the show.
I think maybe the one you open the show with, that's it's like all the crazy, like, 80s
yes.
curls.
Yes, and she wasn't like that to begin with. Cher brought her team on, and so Chuck Lapointe, who designed our wigs, and they're exceptional, and there's a lot of them, but then Cher kind of brought in her people, her makeup, and wig artists. So Francesca and Serena came in, and that was one of the beasts that got a makeover, is that first wig.
Wow, that's amazing. No, I was going to say that it, you know, when you talk about how much the three of you interact, it does sometimes feel like the Cher comedy hour amongst Chers. Uh-huh. Sort of like yeah. there's so much like yeah. banter amongst the three of you that I think that's part of the humor yeah. of the show is seeing that when it happens and not knowing like what time we're in, but mm-hmm. like
exactly.
feeling like you're inside her head a little bit. Anyway,
yeah.
You play.
I take her childhood and through up until she starts to do the Sonny and Cher comedy hour. So like 19-ish. And then Teal takes over. But it's cool to embody that part just because it's so much of who Star and Lady are. Like I get mm-hmm. to start their paths, which is really fun. And it was great to kind of have Cher on board for a bit because she was always like reminding me how shy she was. And that's so much of like what our show is about. And the core of it is that she is just this shy human who kind of keeps confronting these huge opportunities and really taking them and making them great, like big and great. And it's cool because I feel like I'm in a similar position. I like get to be on Broadway every day and I'm like scared shitless, but I do it. And that's a cool feeling every night.
Another thing that Michaela gets is this love affair with her mother, that Cher truly has this gorgeous respect and love for her mom. And you get so many of those scenes mm-hmm. played by Emily Skinner. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a beautiful yeah. foundation that you set. And that yeah. relationship really has an arc throughout the whole night.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and we worked on that relationship for a long time. I think mm-hmm. that was such an influx relationship. And to be able to see what it is now in the show is so special because she does have this like resilient and supportive mother who is in her life every step of the way. And to show that when Sonny comes along and when Sonny leaves and to show that she's always there no matter like what stage she's mm-hmm. in and she gives her room to grow and also is there when she wants help. It's a really cool relationship, and it's one I'm proud of mm-hmm. because we've worked really hard on it for the last year to figure out what it is and how to show that to people and you know, my section.
In four scenes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. okay, Lady. I basically, what's interesting about sort of the way that our show works as far as the three shares, how we sort of each take over the storytelling, it's kind of like, because we are, it is not linear and we're in and out of each other's heads and in each other's, and have scenes together. But as far as like the storytelling in the timeline of Cher's life, we sort of, whenever there's kind of like a wall that she sort of hits, that's a new it's basically like a new version of herself. Like we sort of, our director's kind of talking about like the rings in a tree. When there's like a big event, the tree then has develops a new ring. And that's sort of like how we sort of tag in and out. And Lady takes over basically when, so Sunny and Cher, so Babe has had the Sunny and Cher stardom of like being these musicians and singers and being these huge hit singers. And then now they're having a lull in their career and trying to figure out what the next step is. And Sunny is like, hey, let's work on this comedy bit. And so Lady sort of takes over in the like, okay, we're making a transition from just a singer into a comedian and a little bit more of an actress on stage as well as singing. And so I carry that through like the development of the Sunny and Cher Comedy Hour, basically to the end of that, and sort of the, as the marriage of Cher and Sunny is sort of like dissolving. And it's the big part in her life when she becomes a legit household name. They are in people's living rooms on a weekly basis. Everybody's watching them. She's becoming this, a different type of star. She's not, she's in the forefront. She's, people are watching what she's wearing. She's developing this relationship with Bob Mackey that goes on, that's still going on in her life. He's such a huge part of her life and helped develop sort of this iconic person that she is, that the public sees her as, you know. And and she really, she's really trying to also find, I think, because she always says she wants to be famous. Babe says that in the very beginning, and even Cher has said that to us. Like she was talking to me about her relationship with Sunny, and that she's like, I wanted to be famous. I didn't know necessarily know how to do these things, but I knew I wanted to be famous. But the work got really hard when she wasn't having fun anymore, because the work-life relationship balance was really suffering, because her and Sunny were just nonstop. They were doing the TV show all week, still going to Vegas and doing all these shows. Literally 7 days a week, every hour was basically filled with some sort of work engagement. And she just, and she has a child. She's trying to raise a child. And this beautiful, fun relationship that Sunny and Cher created when they were young is slipping away, and she's not quite sure what to do with that. And yeah, so then their kind of relationship is starting to dissolve, and the next step for her to do is figure out how to be a solo artist, how to pursue her own career with just herself, without Sunny. And that's sort of when Star starts to take over, because that's sort of the next like big traumatic event in her life. Yeah.
Well, I mean, listening to you all talk, it sounds like the woman herself and the story is really like the huge part of the appeal of doing this. And I have to say that seeing the show and, you know, just to take one example, seeing how she was treated when she had the much younger boyfriend, which I vaguely remember, but I think I was a little too young, but my friend who I saw the show with was like, oh my God, it was like all over People. And I remember when they were on TV together, seeing how she was treated is just like, it feels like ancient history to think that a woman would be like ridiculed the way she was for having a younger boyfriend. Yeah. I mean, it's like unthinkable these days.
But she's very vocal in saying almost every choice she made, because they're big and they're bold and they're made by her heart, it was laughed at. It was judged. It was scrutinized. And that's another theme through our show. It's like, regardless of how much you laugh at me, this has happened my entire life, and I now have thick enough skin to move forward. Doesn't mean it doesn't affect me in many ways. Doesn't mean I'm not going to hurt a little, cry a little, then learn and move forward. But that is the beauty of Cher. We never say she's like reinvented herself. She's just constantly been there and is one of the most resilient people you will ever meet.
Yeah, no, she is. I mean, she really is a trailblazer in so many ways. And, you know, I think that we have to talk about the music. And I have certainly never heard so much Cher at the same place at the
same
time.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
I know. It is one of those shows where you sit there and you're like, oh yeah, that song too. So, you know, when you approach the vocal part of this, all of you, you know, where did you start? What are kind of the signatures that you keep in mind? And then you presumably go and make it your own a little bit too. You know, how do you take it from not being just an impression, but being recognizable enough that you get the kinds of reactions that you do when people hear you sing?
I did. It's interesting because her sound, finding that singing voice, I think I can speak for all three of us, was easier for the songs.
Yeah.
It's something that you can listen to over and over again, start to parrot and repeat, and then you can mold in order to have it service your character and service the story you're telling. The speaking voice was very different because there's only about two or three places in the show that are verbatim, one of which is the winning of the Academy Award for Moonstruck, the Sonny's eulogy,
infomercial.
And the infomercial. So again, not from start to finish verbatim, but the lines have been pulled. Other than that, trying to find her unique sound, which is totally like anybody else, it's very singular. Her diphthongs, the way she says certain vowels, how she kind of slightly goes up at the end of sentences, but not making it sound like a question mark. Like, it was a real dance for all of us, I'd say, for the last year.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, you don't just want to repeat what's already been recorded by Cher. We'll be the first to tell you, we ain't Cher, and we know that. So we had to find our own voice within this sort of essence and energy and understanding of what we knew the audience was going to expect and still stay true to ourselves as actresses.
Yeah.
So that was the balance. Now, there are some songs that are just done right. So, you know, I listen to Turn Back Time. You think I'm going to make some stylistic choices? No. I mean, it's Turn Back Time. It's kind of perfect. It's the way we start the show. We want the audience to drink it all in and believe that I am, you know, one of the Chers for the evening and driving the bus, and want them to feel comfortable and safe for the next 2.5 hours. Again, at the end of the show with Believe, I wasn't going to do anything greatly different with that. But then there are these great nuggets that help the story, one of which is The Way of Love, which is a beautiful song, and I love it so much. And it's just this small, intimate, but all emotion and all sentiment. And to stand without any sort of fancy lights or costumes, just in a white t-shirt and denim jeans, to sing that song on Broadway is extraordinarily special. And I do try to put my own spin on it. And I hope people can see that, you know, Michaela's in there, Teal's in there, I'm in there, and yet somehow the big protective mama bear umbrella will always be Sherilyn Sarkisian.
Yeah. I think one thing that helps a lot is that because it is a musical, some of these songs have to serve a purpose of forwarding the story. So we're approaching some of them songs as storytelling songs, not just, I'm going to stand here and give you a concert version of the song. So that gives you, because we have worked so hard, there are certain, you know, consonants, vowels, little bits of the songs that sort of are locked in our Cher sort of version of the sound. But then you can let go of some of that and just try to really tell the story of the song to get through to the scene, to the emotional place that it needs to be. And I think that helps a lot. I hopefully ground it and not make it just like we're doing impersonations of Cher. Because there are people who have made brilliant careers out of doing an impersonation of Cher, and it is amazing. And there's no way we're going to attempt to do that because we don't want to. That's not, we're actresses. We're drawn to this woman because of all the complexities of her and how the ugly things and the beautiful things, and we want to try to as best as we can get all of that.
My daughter is on the way to impersonation, though. She'll be four next month, and she goes, "Do you believe in love after love?"
No.
Oh, she's giving you full love, not love.
God.
Yeah, she's on her way. I see a good career there.
She's on her way to Vegas right now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
I think I have a similar path insofar as the singing was easier than anything else. I mean, you listen to I Got You Babe enough times and just keep singing along with it until you can't quite tell the difference between your voice and the voice in the recording. I mean, that's basically what I did. His voice is super nasal, so there's no way around it. I mean, it borders on caricature, but I'm a trained singer, so it's just finding a way to sound like him without some of his sort of pitchy imperfections, and I knew that there are certain beats in the show that have to be done as authentically as possible in order to serve the show's function. So something like I Got You Babe has to sound the way it sounded to everyone who heard it for the first time in the 1960s, who are reliving that moment, because that is a big part of the reason to even do these shows is nostalgia. And I don't say that with any derogatory comment. I mean, really, genuinely, you see people hold each other's hands and sing along and people putting their heads on one another's shoulders. I mean, there's a reason to relive these moments. But then Sonny is a real person. So there's a big difference, I think, between the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour persona that we know, especially of Sonny, because he was such the big clown, and then the more relaxed version you might hear in an interview or on some of their... There's a couple of tracks of them just talking. There's a track on on their best of album called Hello, and it's just the two of them sitting at a piano, and he's a terrible pianist, and just playing chords, and they're talking for like 3 minutes, and it's such a different sound. So finding that version of him, the behind the scenes version, to balance this sort of, you know, clownish onstage version of him, and being able to do both of those things so that the audience understands this is a real person who then puts it on for the show within the show that we're watching, was some of the fun and the challenge of him. And he's also from, you know, he's got this weird accent. He's from the Midwest, but he grew up in Southern California. And he also has, like, the slightest Southern twang. But then he also has this almost, like, New York, like, Northeast hustler energy mentality. It's sort of this weird amalgamation of vowel sounds and energy and just trying to find. But he also, like, you, and if you watch him, this is that he leads with his crotch. So it's like there's a lot of that. There's just no way around it. You watch Sonny Bono, I mean, he really does. So that's just trying to blend all those things into one actual person was the fun, not even the challenge, the fun of it.
He has a lot of confidence for a man with a haircut and, like, stature that he does.
Truth.
Oh my God. I mean, his outfits, the clothes that man would wear. Holy crap. Like, you have to be have so huge balls just to be like,
leads with his crotch.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Some of those jackets. I just saw a picture of them from London, and he was wearing what looked like, remember when Luke Skywalker kills that ice monster in the beginning?
Of course, I remember that.
It looks like he made a jacket out of that. That's what it looks like. That's what he wore.
That's what a Southern California person does. When they go to London, right, they put on all the fur. They're like, it's so cold here. I'm going to wear 7 layers of fur on my feet, on my head, on my back. Everywhere.
Truly.
No, I mean, when you see Cher and Sonny first meeting and he comes across as such a baller and you're like, really? It's really the way it was? Okay.
Yes.
Like, I guess the ladies went for that. But I mean, Jared, like, you've had a very unique career in terms of, like, playing artists on stage before. And I was kind of curious to hear how the different roles you've played have sort of led you to this point, like what you've learned and sort of the pitfalls you've learned to avoid in portraying someone who is a living or close to living artist.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I just do what I'm hired to do. So I wish that I could say, oh, well, I've chosen this path, but what I get hired to do, I do. And I think that one of the big pitfalls, and we've already sort of gone through this, is not to do an imitation. It's not a documentary. It's not a movie. It's a theatrical representation of these people's lives. And so, you know, it was interesting when I did Frankie Valli, I was stepping into someone else had created the role. And so, and that show, you know, for better or worse, was directed within an inch of its life. I'm talking about hands on mouth at a very specific moment. I mean, it was really specific. So it wasn't until I played Barry Mann that I had a little more flexibility. And he was also a real person, but just not as well known. Mm. Frankie, obviously, you know, everyone knows the sound of that voice. And if you don't hit those marks in every single song, then people will say he doesn't sound like the guy. So that was that was the big challenge there. Sonny is almost the biggest challenge insofar as he was a music star and a television star, and people know everything about him, physicality, the way he sounds when he speaks, when he sings, when he moves, and everything about that. So again, you know, just trying to find a way to authentically inhabit that without doing an impersonation. And, you know, I learned watching Jesse Mueller play Carole King, you know, people would always come and say, God, she sounds just like her. And I would think to myself, you know, she sounds a little like her. But what she really is doing so incredibly well, when she did, is embodying her.
That's right.
The vulnerability and the passion and the way that she would sing. She and hitting certain markers. That's another big thing. Is like, if you can do five or six things that sound just like that person, you're forgiven for a lot of the rest of it, of coming close or doing, you know, a fairly accurate portrayal. And now, you know, getting to watch these three all the time and knowing and watching what it is like to do a version of somebody without doing an impression, you know, and sort of and growing and learning with them as they do, you know, I'm trying to reflect back to them my version of Sonny with their versions of Cher.
And I have to interject because he will never say it, but Cher loves Jared. She loves his embodiment of Sonny. She loves his physique, of which Sonny never had. There's a bedroom scene where Jared is, you know, without a shirt, and she makes note every time she's there, well, Sonny never looked like that. Where's Jared? Sonny didn't look like that. So that needed to be said.
And I'm glad it was said here.
That's adorable.
It is really, really. And she's also very honest in saying, if Sonny were to walk through that door right now, there is a bond, there is a connection that is undeniable and would still exist today. She can't necessarily define it, but they are impassioned and forever entwined, even past, you know, death. It's really something that she speaks of, and her entire being changes when she speaks of Sonny.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I was going to say that it sounds to me like she has been very closely involved in the production and offered thoughts and advice, but that's just my perspective as an outsider. Like, how has it been to work with her, and what has she been sort of contributing to the development of the show?
Let's see. Well, when we did that two-week workshop back in, like, October 2017, she came to that. She wanted to come early and meet us all before. It was a fluorescent-lit room, much like the one we're sitting in, and we all knew we were about to play Cher for Cher sitting 5 feet away from us in this sort of lighting. Yeah. So it was interesting. I must admit, I hid. I went upstairs. I hid. I didn't think I could meet her before presenting, but she definitely wanted to meet us all before. She was gracious. She was lovely. And she had tears streaming down her face. She was holding her, I can only guess, friends, whether
yeah,
that
posse.
Be her she posse. Was she was holding their hands. But then we didn't get any feedback necessarily that exact day. But then the notes started to come in for Rick Ellis, our writer, Jason Moore, our director, and of course the producers, Jeffrey Seller and Floaty Suarez. Then that would kind of filter into us. Chicago, she was present for, well, again, through emails and text messages and whatnot, all of her information, all of her notes were coming through creatives and producers. Mm-hmm. We, the artists, got to see her for 3 days consecutively when we were in Chicago. She was very present for those performances. She was very articulate in what worked for her and what did not work for her. And then that, of course, informed what the next sort of version of the script looked like. And then it went through many incarnations then. Then we got a huge influx of Cher probably 2 weeks before we opened,
yeah,
3 weeks before
yeah,
we opened.
Right.
So the closer we got to opening, I think the more vocal and the more sort of she knew it was coming. So it was like, this was the time to say something. It's now or never. And she really embraced the now. And she was present. And she went through, you know, all stages of emotion and being vocal about what she needed for her to feel safe and comfortable. And, you know, we had to honor that. I mean, it's called Frickin' yeah. Cher Show. As well as, you know, if you're going to just look at it logistically, she's a producer. So her voice is, it not only is, you know, above that of Jeffrey's or Floaty's, she has emotional investment, financial investment, a lifetime of investment in this show. So in a lot of cases where you might freeze a show, which for the listener, if they know or don't know, that means no more changes. Once we freeze this show, it is what it is. We had that understanding. It didn't happen for us until opening night.
Whoa.
Yes. Because she was living through her life while watching it, and she would focus on one part, and that's what she could speak to. And then I'm guessing that the next time she watched, it was another part that she could speak to. And so incrementally, we were getting these changes, and we had to honor that for sure. That's cool. She was very incremental.
She's so hands-on.
Yeah.
Is there anything that she said specifically to any of you that was incredibly like illuminating or that really kind of changed how you approached a scene or a song or anything like that?
She speaks a lot about her struggle as a woman in this industry. Mm-hmm. That, you know, in the 60s and 70s, you were demure. You were the pearls and the sweater. So for her to even just be herself was kind of an act.
Steal.
Yeah, it was an act of defiance, just being who she was innately. And then, of course, as Teal mentioned, the clothing and Bob Mackie's designs, that was another act of beautiful but defiant presence. She speaks a lot to being there for her kids and being torn, which I can say as a mama, it's the same thing, trying to find that balance between profession and personal. It's the age-old, you know, conversation. And she did share, I think, personal things that... if you don't mind, I'm going to keep as a little bit of nugget. One thing that I do have that I love is with every character I develop, I wear a certain scent. And so I asked her what she wore. And she said, well, I have my perfume Uninhibited. And you can buy it on, you know, Amazon or eBay or Macy's or whatever. And then 2 weeks later, I got a teeny little vial of a new bottle that she's developing now. And so I'm wearing what she's wearing, which is very special. And actually, in the opening night where she came on stage and she embraced us all, she hugged me and she goes, oh, you smell like me. So that was really great. It was really, really great. And something that really does, it's around me, it surrounds me when I'm on stage, that it's her smell.
That's cool. It was really cool when she went on stage. I watched the tapes that made it onto the interwebs.
It was a special experience. I remember she sat on my couch like, probably a week, maybe less, before opening, and was giving me notes, and she had said, like, you're so much like me just sitting here. So, like, be free in that because you don't have to do much. That was freeing just because I think we, for the last year, we have made so many decisions with our creative team and with our scene partners to be able to... show this story and the story being the priority, not the impression, not the whatever. And for her to say that, like, I was, and it wasn't about the voice, it wasn't about the look, it wasn't about anything, it was just that I was enough, and I you can be free in that was something really special to hear. I liked, like, that gave me a lot of motivation for the next week to pull it out because it was a long one.
Well, that actually makes me think, which I hadn't realized before, that to be working and portraying someone who's not just a singer but also an actor and kind of understands what it is to be an actor and a director.
Yeah.
I mean, what she's telling you must have so much more weight and sort of make more sense than just having a singer who's like, "Dude, this is me."
Right. She really does. She can pick out a specific line and say, "Let those words speak for you. You don't need to emphasize X, Y, Z." Mm-hmm. So she was very specific about certain things that she saw or heard that didn't ring true to her.
Yeah. Oh, my turn.
Yeah. Well, if you have anything.
No, I mean, it was because we all had kind of like moments where she like had little one-on-one moments. And she talked a lot about Sunny because I'm portraying this kind of very
massive,
difficult chunk of their relationship. And, you know, we have these kind of fight scenes and it's, I mean, I know that she's a ballsy gal and it's so funny because she's fairly soft-spoken and has kind of a very like lower temper tempo of just kind of that she just seems to speak in and whatnot, which seems so counterintuitive to the persona that she puts out on stage. But she's just, it's just so nice just to spend time with her to see how in her body she is and how demure. And she told me, she was like, one thing she was saying, she's like, everybody thinks I'm so tough and I'm not really tough. And it's just so, you think she is, but she knows how to put on an armor. And that's where I think the clothing. And also, I think she's been an actress from day one because she knows how to present herself in a way that makes the world see her in a way that she necessarily is not inside. She's an actor. She's been acting these different types of versions of herself that people have fallen in love with and have really, like, really zeroed in on and been like, oh, that's iconic Cher. That's iconic Cher. That's right. iconic Cher. And it's...
But when she refers to herself, it is, it's demure. It's soft. It's feminine.
Yes,
it's the bouquets that come from her are light pink and whites and like the softest, most beautiful, almost like a baby shower or something arrives at your door and you go, these are from Cher. And that's so interesting to me that that aesthetic is what she sees herself as rather than the leather and the stones and the skulls and the... It's real dichotomy, and I think that's what makes her so amazingly beautiful, is she is both. She really is both.
That's great. Well, I have to ask about the costumes, and I just, like, I feel like I want to know what it's like backstage at the show, and, like, Jared, are
you,
like...
No, you don't. No, you do not want to know that.
Like,
no.
It is like, I can't even imagine, like, the quick changes and the amount of, like, double-sided tape that's involved. Like,
no time for double-sided tape, because the lines change so much. You have to be like, our underwear is very selective because it might show you don't want to see that.
It's very true. Brassiere, it's not a choice.
Yeah.
Pantyhose leave lines on your midsection so you can't wear. It's really wild what Bob needs to see and needs not to see. And there's a lot of not going on, you know, in the show
it's
and backstage.
Show under
it
the costumes.
Really, really is. I've got people in quick changes that are following other dressers. I'm like, hi, nice to meet you. And you're just standing there and, you know, these teeny
I'm
little
like, it's so nice to meet you. You're seeing my tits for the first time. What a business.
What a business. I mean,
no
I...
No business when you meet someone
no,
with, like,
what
your...
We do makes, no, no.
It's
what
insane.
We do would not be applicable or acceptable in any other industry.
I have a costume that is happening on stage with mirrors around me
around
with a full audience. I have covered maybe to my neck and I have to strategically place myself and I drop down to just my thong.
Yeah.
And I'm changing shoes, I'm changing all these things, and there's all these actors around me are boys that are playing like the dressers. They're acting around me being like, do you need
it
this?
It really
do you need
has
this?
Tested
this thing?
Our wills of, you know, any sort of
it's insane.
Modesty. And I gotta tell ya, is a middle-aged woman who has fed people with her breasts and like given birth, it's been a thing. Like, it was a real thing. My first costume fitting, I just thought, this is not gonna work, Bob. I mean, I don't have the physique. Like, well, nobody does. She really is an otherworldly type of creature. But yeah, I just didn't know how this was gonna happen. And he's a genius. And he works on your body, your form, and the sequins will lift what needs to be lifted and covered what needs to be covered and hidden what needs. And it's really like he's painting and sculpting on your body as he's creating for you in the vein of Cher, but for you.
Yeah.
Well, everyone here, Jared included, the abs and in the collective abs here are impressive.
I am doing butt tucks right now as we speak.
Oh, yeah.
It's happening.
Oh, my God. No, I mean, like, you. I feel like you have, there's so much weight on you opening the show, Stephanie, because it's like the first look at Cher. It's like the first ab display. It's the first, like, cleave going on.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a lot to carry on your shoulders.
She's not starting with, like, you know, a jeans and t-shirt, like, hey, Cher. Yeah. She's, like, one of the most iconic outfits
and
that is literally...
Stephanie was not fully on board with this whole opening
no.
a while ago. And I remember discussing it and, like, all of us were petrified. But you're exactly right. That first moment is a huge deal for the audience. It sets up the rest of the show. And to now see the audience just go crazy every single time
I'm
and
so
for you to finish
and
that number,
and,
it's actually so cool for me to see a mama have that journey of just true terror to, like,
owning
so there's that.
The shit out of
I just finished that number and it rocked because everyone's, you know, completely on board for the rest of the show. She really drives it.
Yeah.
Thanks, McKay.
You're welcome.
And having Lassie and Stephanie in her falsettos costumes, it's like, it's a big jump.
I'm used to comfortable shoes.
Comfortable shoes, like sort of jazzercise, like moment.
Culottes seem to be what I usually wear in my characters. Not this one.
Culottes.
The knees are going downhill from here. Imagine what will be next. Well, I have to, Jared, I feel like you're the new hero of Broadway. Speaking for Kanye,
yes, here it comes.
With your moment. Yep. We are at Billboard. I have to ask about this moment. You're like the new Patti LuPone, I guess. That's meant as a compliment. no, so I kind of would love to hear about the opening night atmosphere. There were a lot of famous people there, and sort of what's going through your head as you send this tweet, and the reaction was you got a good reaction. So how did this all happen?
I certainly didn't intend to be Patti LuPone.
Nobody ever does.
No, that definitely was not part of any part of my train of thought. I think if anything good came of this whole thing, and it did seem to turn out okay, and he was respectful in his response, and they were wonderful at the end of the show, and they were standing, if it serves as any kind of a sort of a PSA for people to, especially, in 2018, to know that we can see you in the audience, and especially, it's a dark house, and if there is a light on your face, we can see it. You're not in a film, you're not at home, you're right in the audience, and if you're fifth row aisle, on opening night, we can see you. So that's really, I don't know that much needs to be said since it's been liked 67,000 times on Twitter or whatever it is. But like, I think that, that's all that needed to come of it. And I'm really glad the way that they responded and the way that they both seem to have enjoyed the show so much. And that's really ultimately what matters. I admit that it was slightly impulsive when I wrote it.
I feel like I'm just totally out of the loop. I didn't realize what a huge Cher fan Kim was.
Oh, yes.
She is. I mean, it makes total sense, yes. But
she's worn her outfits for Halloween. Yeah. She loves her.
Yeah.
She sure does.
But who is,
is Kanye? I have no idea what Kanye's stance was on Cher until
no idea.
Kim got in his life, but
But if you start really, as I did, delving into those YouTube videos, you will be a major fan of Cher.
Oh,
if you just have heard her on the periphery and you go, oh yeah, Cher, I know her. Yeah, she's a pop culture reference, of course. But if you do one Google search and start to watch an interview with Oprah, which then leads to another video, by the fifth or sixth video, you will be a diehard fan. Yeah. There's something so contagious and authentically raw, and yet she's just a unique figure.
I don't remember the first time our director said it, but Jason Moore called her a planet.
Oh, yeah.
She has this huge gravitational pull
she does.
For every human that she comes in contact with, or even through a screen. And it's remarkable. It's one of her superpowers. We always talked about it in the room, and we were always trying to find her superpowers.
I like the idea of Planet Cher. Mm-hmm. And also of a Cher spiral on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a big fan of a spiral.
I mean, 6 decades of work. She has, touched on so many different types of music, so many different fashion styles. There is literally something for everyone in the Cher, genre. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm obsessed with one thing I love about this, what the Cher show has given me in my life, is that I now know the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour, which just cracks me up. And that sense of comedy is so specific and of such a very specific time that I'm too young to have experienced. But that, and then some of her albums from the 70s, that
are
music.
Fantastic.
Oh my God, fantastic. I love it.
Great gym albums, everybody. Great gym albums.
Ooh, yes. Oh my gosh, so many.
And their covers of songs were so cool.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, I had no idea that they did the first Bang Bang, that Sonny wrote Bang Bang. I know that song, the Nancy Sinatra version well.
Yeah, me too. I didn't realize that either.
Love Cher and Sonny's version, and I'm like, what? Yeah. They did it first? Yes.
Real
well
artists.
Done.
Yeah. I was going to say, Jared, are there Cher songs that you secretly wish to break out on?
Oh, I honestly, what's funny is Dark Lady was always kind of my favorite Cher song. And then I got to
sing.
Yeah, it was a gift to get to sing it in the show. Because it's just sort of dark and creepy and cool. And it's, I don't know, it's like her dark, weird version of Love Potion Number 9 or something. It's so cool. I love that song. And so when I get to sing it in Act 2, that's definitely a real treat. And back to our conversation about are you as accurate as can be? No, not there, because Sonny never sang Dark Lady. So I in Sonny's, a little bit of Sonny's voice, get to sing it however I kind of want, mm-hmm. within
reason.
Within the parameters of what our music director will allow, Andrew Resnick will allow me to do.
Sunny as Cher would be an interesting new direction.
Oh, wow. It's a missed opportunity.
I was just going to say that. The Cher show too. Well, thank you so much for coming. It's great to talk to you guys and keep rocking it.
All right.
Thank you.
The Cher Show is currently playing on Broadway at the Neil Simon Theater. Whether you are a longtime fan of Billboard on Broadway or a first-time listener, subscribing to Billboard on Broadway is a great idea, as is giving us lots of nice stars and reviews on iTunes. You can listen to the podcast also on platforms like Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. And if you're a fan, you can always find me on Twitter at Rebecca Milzoff, on Instagram at You Down With RMM. You can always tweet about Billboard on Broadway with the hashtag Billboard on Broadway, and hope to have you back for the next episode.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.